The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you feel that to do so, you would have to check your brains at the door, and you'd even have to check them in the express line for 10 brains or less. Well, if you feel that way, you might be in agreement with my special guest today, Dan Barker. I'm going to introduce Dan in just a couple of minutes, but I want you to know that I have come to think of Dan as an old friend, even though actually we've only met face-to-face twice in the last 19 years. I still think of him as an old friend because of some of the experiences, the bonding experiences we've had together. Once a debate at UCSD and once a debate at Arizona State University. Dan and I do not agree on a whole lot. We would probably argue about the color of crayons if given an opportunity, but we do agree on at least two points, two important points. First, free speech and the right of people to hear both sides of an argument. Neither Dan nor I feel threatened when somebody criticizes our worldview. We don't get all bent out of shape over it. We don't get all whacked out over it. Rather, we see it as a welcomed opportunity to discuss our worldview. And second, this is the odder one. Oddly enough, I agree with one of Dan's primary points when he does debates, that people should not follow God or follow anything out of blind faith. We actually agree on that point. Where then do I disagree? I disagree that we need blind faith to accept God. I believe God has made himself known. Now, before Dan comes on to tell us that actually God has not made himself known, let me introduce a woman who always makes herself known, especially to those who don't know her, Sharon Cushard.
Thank you, Bob. Should I introduce Dan with a little bit of a bio?
Give him a little bit of a bio. It's the least we could do for him. He is a guest on our program. Give his resume and really make it count, Sharon.
Okay.
do your best.
Okay. Well, Dan was a former minister and evangelist.
Wait a minute. I thought he was ambassador to France for 15 years. Who is this guy in here? Didn't he grow up in a log cabin in Illinois? No, that's Lincoln. Okay, go ahead.
Actually,
Continue with Dan.
He was a teenage evangelist at the age of 15 and worked with Coleman's ministry.
Oh, Catherine Coleman's ministry, I believe that was.
Right, yeah. In Los Angeles. He graduated from Azusa Pacific University, and then after 5 years of reading in about 1980 time frame, he gradually outgrew his religious beliefs, stating that he just lost faith in faith. And now he is currently the PR director of, actually he's a co-president right now, of the foundation Freedom from Religious
Foundation
at FFRF.org. He's debated a host of very famous people in the Christian community.
I know Norman Geisler is one of the ones on that list.
And Dr. Paul Meyer, Francis Mannion from the ACLJ Center.
ACLU's counterpart organization.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's debated you twice. He's debated Cliff Canuckley from
University. Cliff's a good friend.
Fellowship, yep. And today he is going to chat with you. He does topics like, does God exist? Did Jesus raise from the dead? Is Christianity true? Does ethics require God? Is America a Christian nation?
All very important topics, all topics that we've talked about on our radio show. Well, let's introduce you. Dan, thank you so much for coming on our program. Hello, Dan.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm just great. It's always fun to talk to you. Before we start, can I say hi to my daughter who's listening?
Absolutely.
My daughter, Andrea Johnson, just moved to San Diego from Salt Lake City area.
Is she going to school here? Or?
Her husband is in the Marines.
Oh.
And she's also very active in many things. And I want to say hi to Ethan and Justin, my grandkids, who are probably listening right now, too. So, hi, Andrea.
Well, you know, I can tell all of you that I saw Dan a few years ago. I think it was back in the year 2001 when we... And you didn't look old enough to be a grandfather to me, Dan, so that's to your credit.
Miracle drugs, you know.
Very good. Well, Dan, we've talked before, but since most of this listening audience has not heard us converse, you don't mind if I ask you some questions that I've asked you at previous discussions, I assume?
Well, this is your show, Bob.
Okay. Well, then, since it's my show, I might just do that. Dan, one of your claims to fame is not just that you're an atheist, but that you were once, as Sharon said in your resume, not only a Christian, but a career minister. So I'm sure a lot of our people are going, and we have an audience of both Christians and unbelievers that listen to the show. We don't discuss religion every week on this show, so we have other people listening. And I'm sure both parties, both sides, would be interested in what made you turn from this career, what made you stop believing in God. A little of that came out in the resume that Sharon gave, but mostly we want to keep this a dialogue. But please take at least a couple of minutes here and give us your testimony, or maybe we should call it the anti-testimony, however we want to phrase it.
Well, a testimony is a testimony, so I don't think I've changed much at all. The motivation that drove me into the ministry was to know the truth and speak the truth. That's the same motivation that drove me out. I didn't have some horrible life change or psychological trauma or any of that. I sincerely believed the Bible and the Word of God, and I devoted my life to it. You know, the Bible says you should be hearers of the Word and doers of the Word and not just hearers only, you know, and so I lived a life of faith. I was ordained to the ministry. I got a degree in religion. I served as an associate pastor in three California churches. In fact, we used to go down to San Diego sometimes and preach in some of the missions there. And I was a cross-country evangelist for 8 years, saving souls, because I believed that Jesus was coming soon. Every generation of Christians thinks that it's in the end times, and I thought that was true also. I had read Hal Lindsey and all of these books in the Bible, so I thought, wow, I'm not even going to grow up and go to college. I better start preaching. I started preaching in high school, actually, and I believed...
Well, that made you popular on the high school campus.
Well, actually, it did. There's an awful lot of Christians on high school campus.
Oh, okay. But you didn't have any of the non-believers take an issue with you? And
My Spanish teacher was an agnostic, but he eventually became a born-again Christian, partly as a result of my talking to him. So,
I bet you don't always put that one on your resume, do you?
Well, I do, yeah. I mentioned that in my book. I wrote a book called Losing Faith in Faith, From Preacher to Atheist, and I explain all that. Mr. Edwards, in fact, for many years after that, he kept a Bible class going at Anaheim High School. But I became a Christian songwriter, kind of by accident, and then Manna Music published some of my musicals, which became, for them, for a couple of years, bestsellers. One's Mary Had a Little Lamb, which is the Christmas story. The other was His Fleece is White as Snow, the Easter story. And actually, I'm still getting royalties today from those musicals back in the 70s, which is kind of fun.
Send it to our ministry.
I was a missionary to Mexico for about a total of 2 years. Now, looking back on it, it seems kind of silly, trying to convert Catholics into Christians, you know. But at the time, I thought, you know, they needed the gospel of Jesus, and they weren't really born again. I was a true evangelical, Bible-believing, born-again, loving Christian. You know, I had confessed my sins. I had asked Jesus into my heart. I had asked him to accept his death on the cross as payment for my sins. I acknowledged that I was a sinner, and I had these wonderful feelings along with what we call the fact of being saved and born again because of his death. I read the Bible voraciously, and I had daily devotions, and I talked with God, and I felt the witness of the Holy Spirit within me. I saw many things in my life that I was sure were miracles, things that I could not explain, that were answers to prayer or direct answers to, like, impossible things. And I loved it. I did not want to give that up. I thought, wow, how great to be living in the end times, to be called to be a servant of Jesus, to dedicate your life 100% to go out and preach the gospel, because what's more important than people's eternal destiny? And so I did take the classes on Christian evidences, and I did study some of the scholarship, but I was more interested in soul winning and street preaching and going out and standing on park benches and knocking on doors and preaching in churches. That was the kind of guy I was. I worked with Youth with a Mission for a while. I worked a little bit with Teen Challenge. I worked with Catherine Coleman's healing ministry when she came to Los Angeles once a month, and with a whole bunch of Manuel Bonilla, the leading Spanish-speaking
Well, you did a lot of things with Christianity. Maybe just for the sake of time, I'm sure people are interested in us moving on to the part where you decided not to be a Christian anymore.
Yeah, well, that I can't say that real fast. But in brief, I went through about a 4 or 5 year gradual transition in my early 30s, not wanting to change. But I thought, you know, if I'm preaching this stuff, I better study it. And so I started to read and study. And I read Josh McDowell's and F.F. Bruce, and I read Francis Schaeffer. I read everybody I could, you know, I just looking for evidences and solid things. And the more I read, and I didn't limit myself to fundamentalist authors, I thought, let's see what others are saying. The more I read, the more I realized that the claims of Christianity are not factually true. They don't hold water. And I didn't like to learn that. I wanted it to be true. I wanted to stand on the pulpit and say, we know this is the fact. But the more I read, I went through this gradual process, starting off as a fundamentalist and then gradually moving for a couple of years into a more of a moderate, you know, loving evangelical kind of position.
Right.
Less hell and more love.
That yeah, kind of and there is a difference between fundamentalists and evangelicals.
Yeah, and I went through that period for a while where I realized, why am I preaching so much hell?
Okay, well, we'll continue talking about this. Our special guest today is Dan Barker with the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Once a solid evangelical Christian and turned away from Christianity because he didn't believe it was true anymore. That was his honest belief. Well, I honestly believe it was true, and I was raised as a Jewish atheist, and I had the reverse experience of having no motivation to want to become a Christian because of what was done to my people. And Dan and I will continue talking about all these things when we get back. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Rodan. Dr. Kathy Fields and I created Proactive Solution because acne is the number one problem we see in our practices. As dermatologists, we treat acne as a physical condition. But what really affected us was seeing the emotional toll acne takes. So maybe you're the one with the breakouts. You shy away from social situations. You avoid being photographed, or you won't leave the house without makeup. So what's preventing you from trying Proactiv? My guess is that you're afraid. You're afraid that it just won't work. Afraid to get your hopes up, only to be disappointed. This time you don't have to worry. We are so confident that Proactiv will work for you that I'm offering you a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Solution.
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution, just call 1-800-420-8744 and you'll become a believer. Call 1-800-420-8744. 1-800-420-8744. Call now.
You've got to protect your family with life insurance. This is Michael Medved. I've found that rates have come way, way down. Now, that's good news. If you've had your policy for more than a couple of years, you ought to probably shop it again like I did to save big money. Now, the only call you need to make in San Diego is to Tom Elliott. Tom's insurance agency specializes in term life. That's what you need. He'll shop over 200 top-rated companies and do it all for you. When you call, you'll speak directly with Tom, not some call center in another state or another country. Tom will provide you with the top three quotes within 24 hours. Look, rates are trending down right now, way down. Call Tom Elliott for your free quote on term life. Tom is so confident he can save you money, he'll buy you dinner if he can't. Call 877-894-LIFE. Tom Elliott, the affordable insurance expert, will send you a $25 dining certificate if he can't save you money on term life. Call 877-894-LIFE. That's 877-894-LIFE.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel, and I'm here with my very special guest, Dan Barker. Dan Barker is a Christian minister turned atheist, and Bob Siegel is a Jewish atheist turned Christian minister. So it's always interesting when the two of us talk. Okay, welcome back to the show, Dan.
Hi, thanks.
Now, Dan, in our debates, I've heard you orally and in some of the articles I've read, and of course you've written a book on this subject too. One of the points that you make, and I mentioned at the beginning of this program that I actually agree with this point, is that it's not really a good idea to follow something out of a blind faith. Now, are you aware that the word faith in the New Testament days was defined as trust and obedience, that the apostles were assuming that people would actually encounter and meet God first, and that the faith had to do with trusting them to work in their lives? It would be like if I asked Sharon to go deposit $1,000 in the bank for me, I might have to have faith to believe she'll go to my bank instead of her bank. But I'm not going to doubt that Sharon exists. I'm not going to doubt that she's sitting across the table for me. So are you aware that the Bible has a different definition of faith than Webster's dictionary does? And that makes sense since we're looking at the way faith was talked about some 2,000 years ago in a culture that spoke Greek and Aramaic.
Yes, of course. There are many usages and definitions of the same word. And just like, I know my dad exists, and I have faith or confidence in his character. He's a good man. But by saying that, I'm not denying the small possibility that he actually might not be a good man. He might be a murderer or who knows what. But I have expressed a confidence in who he is. So in that sense, yes. But the Bible very clearly says in Hebrews that he who comes to God must believe that he exists. You don't know that God exists. If you knew it, there would be no belief at all.
Well, the word belief's a little bit different because a word in Greek could have more than one meaning depending on the context. That is true. So what we do then is in English we usually have one word for one word, and if we want a different word, we just come up with a different word. We come up with a synonym. They do that a little bit in Greek, but one word could mean many possible things. So in that context, a person's trusting that God exists. But, at the same time, when we read these accounts of people, they are interacting with God, they're hearing God's voice, they're seeing miracles, and they're still encouraging each other to trust God and obey God. So the word has that usage as well.
Yeah, of course. But either way, you come to God by faith or by knowledge. Either way, you have to be able to justify your claim, even if it's by faith. In fact, there are some Christians who say that we have enough knowledge to justify a small leap of faith. There are others who say we have total knowledge. We don't need any faith at all, and faith is confidence.
Right, right. Yeah,
probably like you.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. And part of the problem here is we don't always define terms, because if a Christian said, I can prove the existence of God, and then they give evidence for the existence of God, they might even give good evidence, but evidence and proof is not the same thing. I would define evidence as that which points to a high probability that a given claim is true, and I would define proof as something that we actually experience for ourselves through some kind of observation. For instance, in science, nothing's proven unless it's repeatable. So my claim as a Christian, then, would be that there is evidence for the historicity of the Bible, the historicity of the resurrection, also evidence philosophically and rationally for the existence of some kind of supreme being. I would say the proof comes when one actually meets and encounters and has a relationship with God. For that reason, then, I would not claim that I have a relationship with God based on any kind of faith as people define faith today. I would certainly say that I trust God to work in my life. I trust God to answer prayers, but I'm not wondering whether he exists when I exhibit that trust.
Yeah,
I'll give you a chance to respond.
Well, I know. I used to preach sermons very much like that, so I understand that. And in the last couple of decades, I've talked to many Christians, some of whom represent your way of thinking. And you and I both know that Christianity is not monolithic. There's probably as many Christianities as there are Christians. There's such a variety of friendly Christians, and even Christians that fight with each other. But yeah, I agree with you.
And there are friendly atheists and atheists that fight with each other too. That's going to happen when you bring human beings into the mix.
Yeah, and in fact, we atheists welcome the disagreements because we think it's a sign of health that you can embrace disagreement and not have to.
Yeah, and I as a Christian welcome disagreement on matters that the Bible's not clear about. Most of the things Christians argue over are matters that the Bible isn't clear about. And another area where I think we would agree, Dan, is I think a lot of Christians listen to what their pastors tell them.
Yeah.
And they go, well, he's an ordained man of God, he went to seminary, he must know what he's talking about. And they're not necessarily going to the Scriptures and studying it for themselves. But now, here would be my question for you. If the Bible defines a Christian as one who has actually met Jesus or met him through the Holy Spirit, and you have come to the conclusion that that has not actually happened in your case, then would you be willing to say that you were not a Christian as the Bible defines one? Because you, by your own words, what you were doing was really exhibiting a faith, and or you were imagining things.
No, not at all. Because back then, I would have said exactly what you are saying today, that I had full knowledge that I had personally met Jesus, that I knew God personally. He spoke to me. He revealed himself to me. He witnessed to my heart through the Spirit. There's nothing that you are saying that I would not have said back then. So
right.
If I was not a true Christian back then you are not now.
Well, right. You, back then you would have agreed. But here's my point, and you're a logical, rational person, and I respect that about you. So let's go through this one point at a time. We would agree, first of all, that either God or Jesus, whatever you want to call him, either he exists or he doesn't exist, right? He can't exist and not exist at the same time, correct?
Yeah, according to the same definition.
Oh, right, okay, yeah. Right. Okay, so either he exists or he doesn't exist. Back when you were calling yourself a Christian, either you really, truly had a relationship with Jesus or you really, truly didn't, by nature of the fact that there really wasn't a Jesus. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. So if you have come to the conclusion now that you didn't really have a relationship with Jesus, then it must be because you finally admitted that these were not really tangible experiences. You were not having the kind of relationship that could be objectively seen or heard or felt. Wouldn't that be true?
No, it's not. Because I do agree today that those experiences that I had back then were actually real experiences. I do not deny those experiences. They really happened. Just like if you wake up in the middle of the night after having a nightmare, your heart is beating, your hands are sweating, maybe you yelled out because of some scary thing that happened in your dream, you had a very real, undeniable, powerful experience that changed your body and your life, right? It maybe woke up the whole house. No one can deny that that experience is real, but what you can deny is that that experience points to anything outside of your own mind. And my claim today is that you, Bob, have a very real, very powerful experience within your mind, but it points to nothing outside of your mind.
Okay, but you came to the conclusion that the experience that you had could not possibly be verified as coming outside of your mind. Well, Dan, this is a great discussion, and I really appreciate the fact that you and I can talk like this. So we'll continue talking when we get back. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
Olin Evans Pool Plastering in Lakeside reminds parents, sit down with your family and discuss the problems and the solution, saying no to drug experimentation. A heart-to-heart talk now could very well save a life in the future. For help, call the Center for Substance Abuse Treatment Line at 1-800-662-HELP. This message from Olin Evans Pool Plastering in Lakeside. On the air asking parents, if you're not speaking to your kids about drugs, who is?
Tired of that old car? Donate it and get a receipt for your tax donation. Car won't pass smog? Donate it and get a receipt for your tax donation. Want to help families, seniors, and kids in your community? Donate your vehicle and get a receipt for your tax donation. It's easy. Call Jewish Family Service. They do all the work and you get a receipt for your tax donation. They pick up anywhere, including your repair shop. Same day pickups are available. Jewish Family Service will provide you with all the necessary DMV forms and you don't have to worry about figuring out the value of your car. Your tax receipt will be automatically sent to you when the car sells. JFS has been providing social services to people of all ages, ethnicities, and religions since 1918. Furniture and household items accepted. Volunteers are always welcome. Call 877-JFS-4CAR. That's 877-JFS, the number 4-CAR.
Jewish Family Service, family is our middle name.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel. My very special guest today from the Freedom From Religion Foundation is Dan Barker. Dan Barker, an atheist turned Christian. Bob Siegel, Christian turned atheist. Welcome back to the program, Dan.
I thought you said it backwards.
You did.
Did I just say it backwards? Okay. Well, for those of you that are dyslexic, you got it. Okay. Dan, is it possible that God exists?
Yeah, it's possible.
Okay. Then some people might be curious, why not call yourself an agnostic?
I call myself both an atheist and an agnostic.
Okay, well now, my understanding of the definition of atheist is that they're saying there might be a God, but so far the evidence is against it, whereas an agnostic is a little more open to examining it. So why would you call yourself both at the same time?
Well, because it depends on what God you're talking about. If you're talking about a lower G God, any possible creator out there, then I am what you would call a lowercase atheist, which is simply the absence of a belief in that God.
Like
you are also a lowercase atheist when it comes to the Norse gods or the Roman gods. You don't believe in them either.
Sure.
You don't. You probably also deny their existence, but in any case, the only difference between you and me is that I believe in one less God than you do, but an agnostic is a question of knowledge, not belief. Theism and atheism are belief questions. Agnosticism is a knowledge question. So the agnostic, as you rightly say, claims that we should withhold judgment, a knowledge claim, if we don't have enough evidence, especially if we have contradictory evidence. But the atheist is simply a person who doesn't believe in God. So an agnostic can't dodge the question. An agnostic either does or does not have a belief in God. So you're either an atheistic agnostic or a theistic agnostic. Like Pascal, you know, was a Catholic believer, philosopher, mathematician, and Pascal was an agnostic who said, "We can't know if there's a God, but I'm going to believe anyway to play it safe." I mean, that oversimplifies his position.
Okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly, and tell me if I'm mistaken, you're an atheist when it comes to the God of the Bible, but you're an agnostic when it comes to the possibility of some kind of creator out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. When it comes to the God of the Bible or Islam or the Quran or the Roman gods, these gods not only do not exist, they can't exist. I am a capital A atheist when it comes to the God of the Bible, for example, but I'm a lowercase a atheist when it comes to, you know, maybe God is some super race out there that created, who cloned us, like the aliens think. You know?
Okay.
I mean, there's an infinite number of possibilities, and we can't examine all of them.
Right. Now, I have heard you mention that belief in any God, not just the Bible God, but any God, is irrational. I didn't hear you say that it's definitely not true, but you don't believe it's rational to believe that. Why is that?
Well, because you should only make a truth claim for something that is supported with evidence and sound reasoning. So even though I don't believe in these possible gods that might exist, and you could convince me if you give enough evidence, I still think it's irrational to make that jump to a conclusion that to actually make a positive claim that they do exist.
So, but couldn't it be argued that you're making a jump to the conclusion that it's irrational? Why not just say if they might exist and they might not exist, we're not rational or irrational either way. Rather, a rational person would be very open to either possibility.
What I'm saying is that you're right. We can say they may or may not exist, but it is irrational to make a positive truth claim either way when there's an absence of evidence.
So okay, right. Now, let's go back to those terms then. That's a good point you're making. I would say that at square one, I'm not talking now about somebody who's had an experience with God that they're convinced of. I'm talking about somebody who's just philosophically looking at the universe, and they're on square one, and they're open to the possibility of God's existence. If there was a rational argument for the existence of God, we would put that under the category of what I was calling evidence, not proof. So let's take the word proof out of it. You don't believe there's any rational evidence for the existence of some kind of feeling, sentient personality that created the universe?
No.
We're admitting that it can't be proven. You don't believe there's any evidence to that effect.
Well, yes, but in the same way, there is evidence for Santa Claus. I mean, people believe in Santa. They sing hymns to Santa. There are presents from Santa Claus. Children's behavior.
Okay, let me modify my question. Is there good rational? We're talking about evidence that it's rational. We're talking about rational evidence.
Oh, well,
you and I would both agree there is not rational evidence for Santa Claus.
That's right.
Is there rational evidence, not proof, rational evidence for the existence of some kind of thinking, feeling, sentient being who created this universe?
There is no rational evidence for that. There's evidence, of course, but there's no rational evidence.
Okay, let me put forth what I would consider rational evidence. And, of course, not all the early rationalists disbelieved in God. Many of them did. But this is something, I won't exactly call it an equation, but it's similar to that. And again, you're a free thinker, Dan, and I appreciate that. So let's do this a statement at a time and see where we agree and where we disagree. Something had to always exist. You can't get something out of nothing. Now, never mind where you think I may be going with that. That statement by itself, do you agree with?
No, I disagree with that statement.
You don't agree that something had to always exist?
No, I don't.
Well, explain to me then how we get something out of nothing.
Well, there's two ways to approach that. One way is to show that the word something is defined as already being, as already being matter, energy, right? So you can get something out of nothing with science right now. For example, in the complete void and complete vacuum of outer space right now, you can produce virtual particles out of nothing. Depends what you mean by something and nothing, because if nothing is defined as a complete absence of matter, right now scientists are actually producing something from nothing. So the whole idea of somethingness did not have to exist forever.
Well, no, because if the scientists are the ones producing it, then it's not coming from nothing. The scientists are part of the mix. When I say something, let's just say the universe. Either the universe itself is eternal and it just always existed, or there was a time when the universe did not exist and it came into existence according to randomness, or some kind of being put the universe here. Now, I'm not talking about Christianity. I'm not talking about the Bible. I'm not talking about Jesus. Wouldn't one of those three possibilities have to be true?
No, because the way you are framing it right now is there are so many loaded terms in what you just said, and the way you're framing it right now is so overly simplistic. Very few scientists would use terms. For example, you would probably agree that according to modern science, not only did space and energy and matter come into existence, but so did time. So it is meaningless to talk about a time when time began, because there's no time before time. So it's a totally
quantum physics, which is now coming out and saying that time isn't immutable, is actually doing some things to support some of the things that have sometimes troubled people in their questions about God, like if God created me, who created God? That's a relevant question. If God exists in time and space, if God exists outside of time and space, then by definition, God wouldn't have a beginning or an end. But however we define the terms, Dan, and obviously in a short conversation, we have to keep the terms simplistic. Either something always existed or absolutely nothing existed. You really can't get something out of nothing. And I don't hear you verifying that you can. I mean, I hear you saying you don't like the terms, but I've never heard a scientist say that there was a time when there was absolutely nothing. No stars, no dust, no chemicals, no energy, no nothing. They believe that even if they believe the universe came into existence by accident, they believe it had a previous form. Well, I'll give you a chance to think about that, and we will be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. I've been hearing a lot about corrective eye surgery. I don't want someone who's just going to roll me in and out of a LASIK factory, do you? You should know all of your options, have a highly skilled doctor you can trust who's right for you.
We interrupt this commercial to bring you breaking news information. A ruling just announced by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services clarified its payment rules to allow crystal lens as an option for Medicare patients. That's right, folks. I said Medicare patients can now receive the crystal lens vision enhancement solution. The natural lens planted by cataracts is replaced with the new crystal lens, allowing the eye to focus on near, intermediate, and distant objects, minimizing the need for glasses or contacts. So call InnoVision Eye Care today or visit them online at InnoVisionEye.com to schedule an appointment. Call 888-EYE-CARE.
Dr. Davies of InnoVision Eye Care. Your eyes deserve nothing less. Call toll-free at 888-393-2273. That's 888-EYE-CARE. InnoVision Eye Care. 888-393-2273.
Have you thought of investing in real estate, but couldn't because everything in San Diego is just too expensive? You know that what you buy today in California, you can't resell tomorrow with a sure profit. If you only have $25,000 to $40,000 to invest, Maurice Beneta has the property that will fit your budget, allowing you to buy and quickly resell for a surprisingly high profit. With the help of Maurice Beneta, your investments will gain the maximum in cash flow returns with these very real and reliable property investments in strong real estate markets. Maurice will partner with you to get you started, and after the first or second transaction, you'll have the experience to act alone. Call Maurice at 775-4488 to learn more about this highly profitable way of investing. 775-4488. Maurice Beneta, 858-4488. 775-4488. Again, that's 858-775-4488.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Welcome back. This is Bob Siegel and Dan Barker. Well, Dan, here, let me just finish the whole equation here, and then we can go back. And I know that you're denying that something always had to exist, but I think, as you said, it's a terminology issue. You might have a different definition of something than I do.
Well, could I clarify?
Yeah, go ahead.
My issue is not so much with the word something, because if you broaden that word to mean anything that, you know, any potential in quantum fluctuation, any of that.
Yeah, let's broaden it to mean anything, any phenomenon in the universe at all.
Okay, or not just in the universe, but in the cosmos.
Or in other dimensions, just existence, period.
But my quarrel is not so much with the word something, it's with the word always, because always is a temporal term. The word always requires time, and you and I both know that outside of the Big Bang, there was no time.
Okay.
So you can't use the word always in a meaningful sense.
Okay, I don't have a problem with that. You know, we're all limited by time and space, so we sometimes use those words. But let's broaden it then. That's fair. Inside or even outside of time. And again, yeah, something would have had to always exist. Now,
not always.
Okay.
Not always.
You don't like the word always because you don't like the word time, but
yeah, because time is a product of the Big Bang. Time is a, like space and energy and matter. It's a product. It's not a thing.
Okay, let me phrase it this way. Did something exist outside of time? And I didn't use the word always that time.
That is possible. We have no way of verifying
okay.
that.
All right. Okay, good. Well, thank you. All right. Now, human beings who, at the moment at least, exist in time and space are thinking, feeling, sentient beings. I would say, and tell me if you where you agree, disagree, you can't get thought from non-thought. You can't get personality from non-personality. Therefore, whatever existed outside of time or always, however a person wanted to phrase it, had to be some kind of thinking, feeling, sentient being. If not, I would put the question to you, where did consciousness come from? Which is what people involved in artificial intelligence are struggling with and questioning right now.
Okay, now on this issue, I totally disagree.
I'm very surprised. You disagree with something I said? I'm shocked. Okay, let me get back in my chair, Dan. Why do you disagree?
Because we do get thought from non-thought. We do get personality from non-personality. Just like these scientists who are trying to build an artificial intelligence, they are producing thought from non-thought. They
yes, but it's because scientists are programming this artificial intelligence that certainly is not thought coming from... Explain to me, please, how thought comes from non-thought.
By the process of evolution from simpler...
Okay, now I hear... Let's say something about evolution for a minute. One thing I hear people say all the time is when somebody says, and I've heard you say this, when there's some kind of mystery, and I have no problem with somebody saying, you know what? Thought is a mystery. Boy, I've never really thought about where thought comes from. That's fine. I can respect that. But when a Christian immediately looks at a mystery and ascribes it to God, what I always hear atheists saying is, oh, the gaps. We're taking a leap. We're plugging a gap with God. Well, I see people do the same thing with the word evolution. The word evolution does not explain how thought came from non-thought. The word evolution, nature, DNA, those are all nice-sounding words. But again, if we went back into what that really meant, we would have to admit that evolution has not explained where thought came from. And that's why there are many evolutionists who are theistic evolutionists. By the way, I don't have a tremendous problem with an evolutionist. An evolutionist who believes we got here by randomness and chance, I think is exhibiting more faith than Christians are accused of exhibiting. But an evolutionist who says, boy, if we really are evolving from a lower order to a higher order, and yeah, thought and sentience had to come from thought and sentience, personality had to come from personality, well, not only does that make sense, but there are many people who believe in evolution, scientists who are not creationists per se, who believe in God for that very reason. And two of these scientists who accepted the theory of evolution, one of them is Albert Einstein. Another one is the one that we owe the theory of evolution to, Charles Darwin, who never set out to disprove God, but was merely trying to give some thought as to what process God might have used to put us here. Okay, I apologize for being so long-winded, Dan. I'll give you a chance to respond a little bit.
Yeah, we're both preachers.
We're both used to that. Go ahead and respond a little bit. That's
okay,
fine.
On the contrary, evolutionary scientists are doing an excellent job of showing exactly how our intelligence evolved from non-intelligence. A simple example, my daughter Andrea, who's probably listening right now, when she was in the womb, you know, when she was conceived, it was just a transfer of DNA. It was just information that was transferred. She was not thinking at that moment, because in order to have thought, she had to have an organized, complex brain. It took a long time to develop. And just like with Ethan and Justin, when they were developing, there was a time in Andrea's process of growth from that first cell to some point in the development where her brain cells got to the point of organization where they could start functioning. Before that point, she could not think. Thought is a process of a functioning brain. And then suddenly, when she got to a certain level of minimal threshold, you could say that she was thinking thoughts. And you know, it took her till a teenager sometimes to think some clear thoughts. but what I'm
hi
saying,
Andrea, how are you today?
we do observe how thought arises from non-thought. I know that's a simplistic example, but evolutionary process, if you'll back up to our development, there was a time in our ancestors' history where they were not thinking. But there came a point where the level of complexity got to where our brains are functioning in a manner that we consider to be thinking. The mistake you're making, Bob, I think, is that you are assuming that thought is something above and beyond matter. You're thinking that thought is something transcendent, that consciousness...
Well, no, it's something that I believe is integrated. We as human beings have thought. We have a brain, which you can take a brain out and you can touch it. It's matter, but somehow the brain thinks. And people that actually study the brain, actual neurologists, would be the first to admit that we still know very little about the brain. So I don't have a problem with the mystery, but I understand your point that obviously a baby in the womb at a point isn't thinking thoughts, but we would agree that in the DNA, in the genetics, in the code, is the potential for thought. And it's hard to think of somebody programmed with the ability to be around other sentient beings and therefore learn how to think with them without something having programmed that. The potential for thinking was right there in the genes, in the DNA. There was a brain cell there. So I think that makes my point. with all due respect, Dan, I think that's still kind of a gap. I think we could look at it and say, no, you know, there was growth, there was development, there was interaction with other human beings, but she had to be somebody with the ability to think and hear and respond and be self-aware. And we do know that babies in the womb are self-aware at a very early age. They found that babies that actually dream and suck their thumbs. And when my wife was pregnant with our daughter, every time we heard a drum kick at Farrell's restaurant, I'm really dating myself by saying Farrell's restaurant, every time we heard a drum, she kicked. So there's thought even in the womb. But even if you want to go back to the very first cell, isn't the potential for sentience right there?
Okay, think of it this way, though. DNA itself, the DNA that my daughter has within her, the DNA itself has changed over the history of our species. There was a time when human DNA was pre-human. There was a time in evolution when that DNA was less evolved than it is now. That process can be shown to have happened through natural selection. What we do know from nature is that complexity can arise from simplicity. We know that all the time. A simple thing like a pebble falling can cause an avalanche. Two parents of average intelligence can produce a genius. There's all sorts of examples of more complexity arising from simplicity. But the theist, the God believer, thinks it's upside down. The God believer thinks that complexity has to arise from more complexity and more complexity in a brain up there. If the brain of a God is a beautifully functioning, deciding, judging thing, then where did that function come from? I mean, you're only answering one mystery with another mystery.
Oh, no. You already answered that one. You admitted earlier on that there's such a thing as existing outside of time and space. So we've solved the problem of God having to have a beginning or an end.
But where did it come from?
Well, you answered that. If God exists outside of time, any being existing out of time would not have a beginning or an end. But see, even if evolution were true, and I didn't say it was, but even if it were true, it still had to go from A to B. Even when you get to the simplest grain of consciousness and sentience, it still had to come from something. Rocks don't think by themselves. Hold on over the break, my friend, and we'll continue. I am enjoying this. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Hi, I'm Dr. Katie Rodan. Dr. Kathy Fields and I created Proactive Solution because acne is the number one problem we see in our practices. As dermatologists, we treat acne as a physical condition. But what really affected us was seeing the emotional toll acne takes. So maybe you're the one with the breakouts. You shy away from social situations. You avoid being photographed, or you won't leave the house without makeup. So what's preventing you from trying Proactiv? My guess is that you're afraid. You're afraid that it just won't work. Afraid to get your hopes up, only to be disappointed. This time you don't have to worry. We are so confident that Proactiv will work for you that I'm offering you a 60-day risk-free trial of Proactiv Solution.
To get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv Solution, just call 1-800-420-8744 and you'll become a believer. Call 1-800-420-8744. 1-800-420-8744. Call now.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with my guest, Dan Barker. We're talking about various arguments for the existence of God. Dan, we're into our last segment. The time goes by awfully fast. I feel like we just got started. You may be feeling that way too. But because the time does go by fast, we'll probably be in the middle of something when we have to quickly leave. So let me at this time thank you so much for taking the time to come on our show. I'm having a blast. I do hope you'll come back and be a guest on our show again and maybe even a guest often.
Oops.
Dan, are you there?
You're a real gentleman, Bob.
Oh, thank you. I wasn't gentleman enough to remember to turn your button back on, but you're on. Thank you.
Are we on now?
Yes, we are on now. Yes.
I apologize for the use of the word simplistic. I didn't mean that as a personal attack.
You know what, Dan? I I did not take offense at that at all. Okay. I think I understood what you were trying to say. And I like you a lot. I think we could go out for a cup of coffee sometime and become great friends.
I'm coming.
Arguing the whole way. And, of course, Sharon could come. Now, Dan, another argument for the existence of God, and what is also interesting is in our debates, I think you and I have agreed that some of the arguments Christians use are not always the best ones. One that I use that I have not found satisfactory explanation of, or at least an explanation for someone to explain it away, is the moral argument for the existence of God. But I find that sometimes when I'm talking to an atheist, they misunderstand what I'm saying. I take the belief that if there were no God, there could be no right and wrong. And to use the word simple again, the very simple reason I say that is because if there were no God, we as human beings would just be sharing our opinions of right and wrong. So anytime somebody wanted to say something was right or something was wrong, we'd have to say, well, it's only an opinion that murder is wrong. It's only opinion that racism is wrong. It's only an opinion that rape is wrong. We don't really believe that those are opinions. We just dogmatically think they're wrong. Now, what atheists sometimes mistakenly think I'm saying is, oh, if you're not a Christian, if you don't believe in the Bible, you don't have a sense of morality. And of course, I'm not saying that at all. In fact, I have atheists go out of their way to say, hey, just because I'm not a Christian, that doesn't mean I don't have a sense of right and wrong. And I go, of course you do. Of course you have a sense in right and wrong, but that makes my point. I think even a person who says they don't believe in God, if they were to really examine where the notion of right and wrong came from, they would realize that in our conscience, and here we go back to personality again and its mystery, in our conscience is a running commentary on how we interact with each other. So now, what do you think of this argument, the moral arguments for the existence of God? Do you believe that there is such a thing as right and wrong, or would you consider yourself to be a moral relativist, which I believe the atheist position would have to make us to be consistent with atheism? Long-winded question, I know.
I've done entire debates on this very good question. In fact, on our webpage, you can hear a complete debate with me and Peter Payne on does ethics require God, and he makes the same point you are making right now. Not that atheists can't be good people, but that they are... Their acknowledgement of morality is an acknowledgement of a source of morality, right?
Yes.
And I can't do it in 5 minutes here, but basically, most atheists will say, and I can't speak for all atheists, most of us will say that there is no absolute moral statement. There is no such thing. In fact, it would be dangerous if there were. We all live our lives in a relativistic situational ethic. Even Christians do. And I think it's to the credit of most Christians that they're smart enough to think that ethics is relative. I'm not suggesting that ethics relative between cultures is necessarily a good thing, but what I'm saying is that the same action can be either a good action or a bad action relative to the context of the situation.
Oh, well, sure. No, I understand. Like, people argue about the war in Iraq. Is it good that we're there, or is it bad that we're there? But wouldn't you agree that there's a framework of good and evil that we're all assuming before we even go into that
conversation? Not really,
no. And somebody might say that I think it was evil for us to go there.
No, I wouldn't use that word, but I agree with you on one point. We secular humanists and atheists, and you good Christians, because I think most Christians are good people, what we share in our definition of morality is this concept. A person can be called ethical who intends to act in ways that minimize harm in the world.
Right. And now, Dan, I would say that we really shouldn't use the word morals in the plural. I would say that the one universal standard of morality which gives evidence of a commentary outside of ourselves is just exactly what you said, that we should be treating other people with love and respect. We may disagree as to what that means. In some Arabic cultures, it's considered polite to burp if you're at a friend's house for dinner. In America, we consider that impolite. But what do they both agree? They should be polite. Now, you made here's a quote that's on your website. And I'm a big believer in context, but you had it as a series of quotes, so I assumed you saw it as something that could stand by itself. True love is respect and admiration, compassion and kindness freely given by a healthy, unafraid human being. Now, wouldn't you say that that's a standard, that's a moral standard, and that you're not saying that can be true for some and true for others, but that ought to just be true for everybody?
No, I'm just saying that's a definition. Some people for some people, that's not true.
Okay, so when you were talked about true love on your website, you didn't really mean that that was true love.
I'm defining the word love. I'm not telling the rest of the world how to act. I'm defining what the word true love actually means. And the context of that was looking at the love that the Bible prescribes, which I think is not true love.
Right, but the minute you look at something in the Bible, and we might argue about whether you're looking at it out of context, and you say that's not loving, you're saying things ought to be a certain way. Something is not loving, it ought to be loving. And my question, Dan, is, where did that ought to come from? If you're an accident and I'm an accident, if we're here by randomness and chance.
I will tell you,
yeah.
if I have enough time here.
Sure.
We are natural organisms in a natural environment, right? If I stick my hand in a fire, I don't have to deliberate. By nature, you and I, if we're healthy, by nature, we automatically recoil from harm. That's what we are as human beings. We automatically do that.
Right, but the question I would ask, and we're running out of time, is what do you do to the guy that says, well, I don't care whether somebody else is in harm or not. We would probably agree that he could care. Dan, we'll have you on again real soon. I know the time ran out quickly. Thank you so much for coming on our program.
There's time for the webpage.
Oh, yes, by all means. Quickly, though.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation is online at ffrf.org.
Okay. I supported an atheist webpage. My life is complete now. Thank you, Dan. God bless. Oh, didn't mean that as an insult. I mean that virtuously. God bless.
I know how you mean it.
Thank you, my friend. Take
Bye.
Care.